from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The non-stick miracle material, Teflon, is everywhere these days. In your frying pans, in carpets and clothing, the chemicals that make Teflon are also in the air and water and, quite likely, your blood. Now, the Environmental Protection Agency has charged that DuPont, Teflon's manufacturer, has withheld evidence of health threats related to Teflon, an alleged cover-up that may have gone on for two decades. The EPA claims DuPont has illegally withheld evidence that a chemical called PFOA, used to make Teflon, is a health hazard. Already about 50,000 people who live near DuPont's Washington Works plant in Parkersburg, West Virginia, where the company's been producing for Teflon for 50 years, are involved in a class action lawsuit against the company. Their water, they say, is polluted and making them sick. Tonight on Point, Teflon on trial. Can you deal with this? Have you ever looked into that scarred old frying pan and thought, Teflon, it's what's for dinner? If Teflon is a problem, do you want to know? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin in New York with Amy Cortese. She's a contributing writer for the New York Times. She's been covering the EPA's complaint against DuPont. Amy Cortese, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So it's a story with a long history here. Teflon's been around for a long time. 3M made key ingredients. Now DuPont makes the ingredient in question. What exactly is the EPA charging, Amy?
Well, in their complaint of July 8th, they were charging that DuPont had violated federal law, environmental laws called the Toxic Substance Control Act, which, by the way, is very antiquated. And they had been, this investigation had been ongoing for a few years. There's still another part of it going on within another branch of the EPA looking into how this chemical known as PFOA has gotten, as you said in your lead-in, so pervasive in the environment and in people's blood.
Describe that for us. It's now reported to be in rivers, in soil, in wild animals. A 3M survey of blood banks found it in the bloodstreams of 90% of Americans. How has this Teflon ingredient become so widespread?
Hello?
Hello, Amy Cortese, can you hear
me? Yes, you just cut out for a second.
I'm just asking how this came to be so widespread.
Well, that's exactly what the EPA is trying to get to the bottom to. They've been working with DuPont as well as other chemical makers in what's known as the fluorochemicals industry to figure out exactly how this has happened. Unfortunately, this process has been going on for more than a year now, and they still haven't even been able to decide what tests to do. So the EPA has recently threatened to do the tests themselves, because in the meantime, you have people in Parkersburg, West Virginia, drinking it in their water. You have, you know, the general population at risk with this chemical in their blood, and we still are no closer to knowing how it gets there.
Now, the use of Teflon has expanded well beyond nonstick frying pans. Why? How is it so widely used in carpeting and clothing and even fast food packaging? Why so popular?
Well, this class of chemicals is known as the most slippery substance in the world. Anything stain repellent, water repellent is likely to, you know, use these chemicals. And they've been incredibly successful because it's a valuable benefit. I mean, you know, nonstick cookware, water repellent clothing. Unfortunately, it hasn't been tested. And to get to your question before, the two most likely ways this is getting into the environment are, one, through the manufacturing process. DuPont has released this chemical into the water and into the air and into landfill. That wouldn't explain how it's so widespread. That, most researchers speculate, is due to certain products breaking down into constituents, including this PFOA chemical.
But one of the characteristics of this chemical is that it doesn't really break down, and I guess that's a source of concern, Amy Cortese, that it sticks around more or less indefinitely.
That's exactly right, and for that reason, it's of great concern to researchers and environmentalists, and possibly of greater concern than other chemicals that have already been banned, like PFCs.
Teflon-related products account for something like 10% of DuPont's annual profits. That is a big chunk. What is the EPA saying DuPont knows that it hasn't told?
Well, it's saying that DuPont did report there were three specific violations that the EPA charged. One was that it did not report when it first found PFOA in the local water supply. That was back in 1984, I believe. And right around the same time, they also, in testing some of their own employees, they found PFOA in the blood of pregnant women. And in fact, in one instance, the PFOA had been transferred to the fetus. They also cited that. They did not cite, however, it's interesting, the fact that two of the seven women that had been exposed to PFOA had given birth to babies with some form of birth defect.
What does DuPont say about all this?
Well, DuPont has long maintained that this chemical is perfectly safe for its intended use. And by the way, that Teflon is safe. The PFOA is used in the manufacturing of Teflon. It's not necessarily in the end product. Usually that is, you know, burned off in the manufacturing process. However, and there are different materials that are sold under the Teflon brand, and one is known to break down into PFOA.
That's fascinating. Which brand name is that?
Well, they're all under the Teflon brand. That's why it's sort of hard to get a handle on. But the chemistry underlying some products that are branded Teflon can be different. But the EPA is investigating both of these main ways of making Teflon-like materials. And I don't think they've concluded on either of them if they're safe or not.
They did a preliminary risk assessment report released last spring. You report that PFOA is a possible carcinogen, but they didn't advise that consumers stop using Teflon products. What's that mean?
Well, it's a known animal carcinogen, and they have reason to believe that it could be of concern for humans as well. I think they, you know, saw no reason yet to tell people to stop using their Teflon pans and other products for the very reason that this chemical isn't present in the end product.
Unless it is, as you say. You say some break down into PFOA.
Yes, it could break down. But I think they just thought it was premature at that time to come out and ban it and, in fact, you know, create a panic. I mean, this material is used in hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of products, and I think that would have a big impact on industry.
And we absolutely don't want to be creating any panic here tonight, but we want to carefully investigate what's known, what's not known, what's being charged, and how DuPont's responding. Amy Cortese, stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington tonight, Tim Krupp. He's a senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group, which has been investigating the effects of Teflon for several years. Tim Krupp, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I'm sure you've been following this and following it closely for a long time. We'll have a lot of consumers listening tonight. Some will perhaps live near the Parkersburg, West Virginia plant where DuPont makes Teflon. Others will be hundreds, thousands of miles from there, but possibly surrounded by Teflon products. What should consumers be thinking as they hear these question marks raised over Teflon?
Well, I think that, as Amy has kind of pointed out, that there is definite concern over this this product. I think that this product kind of hits the trifecta for cause of concern, which is that it does not break down ever. It is found in over 90% of all people's blood in the United States, and it's found in the blood of four continents, every place that they've tested, and many studies have not found a dose which hasn't shown some toxicity. So I think through all those things that it definitely is a cause for concern. And I just wanted to kind of clarify, maybe it'd be easier for the listeners to understand, as Amy has talked about, the two different types of Teflon. They kind of fall into two groups. One is it's used as a processing aid to make PTFE, which is the Teflon that's on your pans.
Okay.
So it's used to make that.
This is the PFOA, she's been calling the underlying chemical.
Yeah, the PFOA is used to make that the PTFE, which is kind of the Teflon that's in your pan.
Okay.
Now, the PFOA, the PFOA that comes from telomeres that is a breakdown product, that is the product that's in, you know, sort of like the clothes, that, you know, like the pants or the carpet or, you know, the fry boxes from fast food or, you know, pizza boxes or things like that. So that's kind of where those two issues are coming from.
And which one is more suspect at this point?
And I think the one that is probably of most concern is that the telomeres are the ones that are found in, you know, the pants or the Gore-Tex jacket.
Okay, so let's set the frying pans aside for a moment, because I'm sure that's the one that people can relate most viscerally to. We've all got Teflon-coated pans that have been around for years, and clearly a lot of that Teflon is gone, and we know where a lot of it's gone. But Teflon in trousers, I had no idea. What's that about?
So that, you know, there's, you know, stain defender pants and, you know, things
like
that.
Oh, I see. All these things that have been touted in recent years, stain-resistant clothing.
Right, and those are used by the telomere technology. And although that it's a different chemical than the Teflon that's used in the pan, they liked the Teflon name so much that they decided to use it for all these different types of chemicals.
And fast food packaging, like what?
So like a McDonald's fry box or...
I mean, if I get a big hamburger of some kind.
Right, so that...
That glossy material inside the box so it's not sticking to the interior.
Or in a coffee cup that, you know, that it's slippery. It used to be wax, but now it's a Teflon material because it's resistant both to oil and to water. And I think one of the things that makes it so good for industry is also making it problematic for people in that it does not break down. And because of its characteristics, it lasts, for years in humans. It can take decades to get rid of most of it if you were exposed no more, which is impossible because it's ubiquitous in our environment.
Are you surprised that these Teflon-related chemicals are in the bloodstream, apparently, of 90% of Americans, Tim Krupp?
Given its properties, I'm not surprised. And given its, inclusion in so many products. Even DuPont claims it's everywhere on their website. And I think that given the fact that it's been manufactured for decades and put into different products over that time, it's not surprising that it's ended up in most people's blood.
Amy Cortese, DuPont has made strong disavowals of a problem here, and clearly they're going to go to the ramparts. But you've reported on some internal memos that the West Virginia Supreme Court had released where they indicate they may have a problem.
That's absolutely right, and I think we're only going to see more of that once the trial starts in Wood County, West Virginia, this fall. There have been a series of documents that have come to light, some that suggests that DuPont had an alternative back in the 1980s, but decided that it was not, you know, it was economically more preferable to them to stick with what they had, even, you know, with the concerns they had at the time. More recently, the courts unsealed documents where a DuPont lawyer was writing to two of his colleagues and basically saying, our story is not a good one. We continue to increase our emissions in the river in spite of internal commitments to reduce or eliminate the release of this chemical into the community.
Doesn't sound good. We'll come back and look at that. We're talking tonight about the flap over Teflon and whether or not the ubiquitous material of convenience is a health hazard. You should know, later in this hour, we're going to hear from a kitchen expert about what to look for in pots and pans. You can join the conversation tonight. It's in everything from nonstick frying pans to waterproof boots and no-stained carpets. Do you want to know if Teflon is a health hazard? Do you reckon you're one of the 90% of Americans with Teflon in the bloodstream? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the flap over Teflon and whether its manufacturer, DuPont, has covered up a health threat. You can join the conversation tonight when the EPA charges DuPont with withholding evidence of concerns over Teflon. Where do your suspicions go? And does the super convenience of Teflon make you a little bit reluctant to hear bad news about the material? If you lived downstream from the Teflon factory, would you be drinking bottled water? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined tonight from Washington by Tim Croppy, senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group, and Amy Cortese, a contributing writer for the New York Times. We approached DuPont earlier today asking for their comment on this. Their internal documents advise that they keep the issue out of the press as much as possible, and they ducked an interview with us, or at least didn't provide a spokesperson. But they did speak earlier today, a DuPont spokesman, Cliff Webb, with WBUR's Noontime program, Here and Now. This was an interview broadcast today about the flap over Teflon. Here's what the DuPont spokesman had to say.
We're certain that the compound is safe, but we also know that it's in the blood of the human population. And as a result of that, we're leading industry efforts with EPA to research it, understand better, and get a better understanding of risks associated with it.
All right. There's a DuPont spokesman earlier today. We're going to hear in just a moment from someone whose family, she alleges, has been affected in a very unhappy way by Teflon. But Tim Krupp, let me first just put that statement to you. We're certain that the compound is safe, the DuPont spokesman says, and we are leading industry efforts with the EPA to research it, understand it better, and get a better understanding of its risks. Does this pass the truth test for you?
The straight answer is no, but I'll kind of take that in two parts. The first statement that it's absolutely safe, I think that their own internal documents show that, either they're not reading their own documents or that they're not reading their own studies, because their own studies are the ones that show health effects.
And we're working with the EPA to get all this figured out.
In addition to that, as Amy has mentioned, in this process with the EPA to get an agreement on the testing that needs done, they've been dragging it out to many of these work groups that are trying to resolve scientific issues. They send lawyers instead of scientists, and it's very difficult to work through some of these issues. And in June, the EPA finally got fed up with not being able to get this stuff done, and said, "Look, if we can't come to an agreement on this, we're going to have to do it ourselves." And I think that those two items kind of show that. Unfortunately, this is not a company working in good faith.
Tim Krupp, Amy Cortese, stand by for a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation from Pageville, Ohio, Deborah Cochran. She is the mother of an alleged victim in the class action suit that's being brought against DuPont. Deborah Cochran, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
You've got a personal story. You've also gotten involved organizationally here. You're founder of something called We Care. It's a nonprofit for alleged victims of water pollution in the area of DuPont's Washington Works factory in West Virginia. You're 40 or 50 miles down the Ohio River from there in Pageville, and you're alleging that Teflon has brought problems to your family. How?
Well, actually, at this point, we do have evidence that DuPont did in-house studies in the regard of enamel degeneration. My daughter was born with a condition that is called early childhood caries, which is actually a birth defect. The enamel does not form on the teeth in utero. And as a result, my daughter had her teeth surgically removed and a permanent plate installed at a very early age.
How did this show up and when, Deborah?
When her teeth first crested through the gums at about 18 months.
And what was evident then? What was the problem?
Well, this condition is very common across the country. The teeth come in what appears to be a rotted condition. And I was not a new mother, but was unfamiliar with this condition. We sought help from several pediatric dental specialists, and eventually were told that the teeth would have to be removed. The risk at this point is that her secondary teeth may have also been affected. They may not ever come in, and if they do, they may not be formed properly as well.
And why do you think this is related to the Teflon production 40 or 50 miles from your home there in Pageville, Ohio?
Well, based on the fact, first and foremost, that perfluorooctanoic acid is a fluoride-based chemical. A lot of people are not aware of that. And any fluoride in excessive amounts, natural or otherwise, can be harmful to people.
So this PFOA we've been talking about is related to fluoride?
C8 is a fluoride compound.
Or yes. C8, another word for it. All right. So it's an excess of fluoride, in essence.
Yes,
you're
exactly.
Saying.
And so, therefore, if you're taking in excessive amounts via drinking water or what other avenues are available, which you've already been discussing, it can obviously affect human health.
Now, there's been a kind of acknowledgement from DuPont of this. I'm reading back in newspaper stories going back in the Sunday Gazette Mail in West Virginia, back a couple of years, DuPont announcing it would replace drinking water for Parkersburg area residents, that is around the Teflon factory there, whose water contains more than 14 parts per billion of this P4 or C8.
Correct. So, that was their initial offer. And initially, under West Virginia law, any time a company, whether you're selling nail polish or pizzas, if you cause harm to a human, you are required under West Virginia law to provide testing to see to what extent that damage may have been created as a result of the product. And initially, they had as well offered to do testing until the court ordered them to do the testing, blood testing, to determine damages. And the monetary amount that this would incur damages upon DuPont caused them to back down, and of course they have since had that repealed.
And Deborah, what's the timeline of your suit, and what is this class action suit seeking?
Well, it is for personal injury, and some of the foremost plaintiffs in the case, involve serious birth defects. The Bailey family, Sue Bailey worked at DuPont in the Teflon division. And there were people in the Teflon division of childbearing age who were suffering serious birth defects in their children. This is one of the problems, the major problems, in terms of this EPA issue and not having reported these conditions to the federal EPA by DuPont. These people have very serious conditions that they are dealing with. There are numerous cancers. A lot of people are not aware that there are 5 known cancers associated with C8. People do get sidetracked on the issue that this is in your carpet and this is in the finish in the dashboard of your car. It's in safety locks on children's car seats. But when you're ingesting this directly in your drinking water, it has a much more adverse effect than, for example, touching the dashboard of your car.
Well, we can hear a lot that's going to be hashed out in this trial. Deborah Cochran, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Deborah Cochran, the mother of an alleged victim of the chemicals related to Teflon. She's one member in a class action suit against DuPont. That will go to trial. We'll see what happens. I'm joined now from Alexandria, Virginia, by John Hines. He's executive director of the Environmental Health Research Foundation. In 2003, he compiled a health assessment of PFOA, the chemical used to produce Teflon, for the Society of the Plastics Industry. John Hines, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
So you have seen this fresh flaring of concern about Teflon. What do you make of it, John? Does DuPont have a real problem on its hands here or not?
Well, we go back and try to assess whether there's a health safety issue here, and we used in the study that we did, really looking at this from two ways.
And we should say this is in the service of the plastics industry.
It's yes, and it's a report that was provided to the U.S. EPA as part of the public document.
And what did you find?
And what we found were two things. First of all, people are exposed to levels of PFOA at much lower levels than cause any effects in laboratory animals. So that says people are not exposed to high enough levels to cause any type of effect.
So it's in almost everybody's blood, but you're saying it's not a problem.
It's not a problem.
Okay, and what else?
That's what that comparison would show.
Yeah.
The other type of comparison is to look at industry workers who are exposed to much higher levels of PFOA than the general population. And if you look at those folks, in fact, they have been studies on their health for a number of years, you don't see health effects in the general population of workers that are exposed. So that's another indication, although if there aren't effects in workers who are exposed to higher levels, you wouldn't expect it in the general population, which is exposed to hundreds of times lower.
And let me put that to our guest, Tim Kropp, at the Environmental Working Group. Tim, here's studies done for the plastics industry, but in both cases, John Hines says giving Teflon-related chemicals a clean bill of health.
I think it's important to note here, if you look at the EPA's developmental risk assessment, that it finds that the levels that are in people's blood are much too close to levels that are toxic in animals. And I think that, you know, that's the important part to make, is that you can do all the, you know, exposure models you want, but when it comes down to it, if the levels in people's blood are too close to the levels that are, you know, causing toxic effects in rats, you know, or monkeys, then you have a problem. And that's what we have here. In addition to that, that even with that developmental risk assessment, they didn't even choose the most sensitive endpoint. Like I mentioned, many of the studies that have been done haven't even found a dose that is safe. In other words, every dose of PFOA that they have given an animal causes some sort of toxic effect. So if there's no level at which you know the compound is safe, it's difficult to say that the level in humans is safe as well.
I want to turn to our callers. Tom is calling from Carlisle, Massachusetts. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, you caught me on the way to the hardware store to pick up some Teflon powder to use as a lubricant.
Oh, good for you.
I'm sitting in the parking lot of the hardware store right now, wondering whether I should go in.
Tom, what do you intend to use it for?
Well, I work with pianos, and we use the Teflon lubricant to lubricate leather surfaces that are under movement,
right?
Friction surfaces.
So this wonderful slippery substance that has so many wonderful applications has been good for your work?
Absolutely, and in fact, it replaced my use of zinc oxide, because zinc oxide had some serious questions around it as far as breathing it in, et cetera. And I've always felt that Teflon has been very safe. I never gave it a second thought.
So
now, as an end user,
right,
using a finely ground Teflon powder,
right,
I'd like to ask your guest,
yes,
what I'm exposing myself to and what I'm exposing my clients to, so, who are then using that piano.
So you'd be touching it and presumably, probably, at some level, breathing it. Tim Kropp, what do you say to the man sitting in the parking lot about to buy Teflon powder?
You know, unfortunately, because the brand doesn't necessarily mean a chemical, we're unsure whether he's dealing with a telomer or the PTFE. But I think
because it's a kind of generic name that's been thrown over both of those. Okay.
Right, but I think in general it's sort of a better safe than sorry precaution, especially if it's in the form of a powder, which could easily get into the air. I think that, once EPA's risk assessment is done, then, that we'll know. But, I think for now it's a better safe than sorry. But
And when will that be? How long does Tom have to sit in the parking lot?
that probably should come out at the end of the year or the beginning of next year. But now, if there are some sort of alternatives that he could use or that other people could use, then that's important to do. And I think that there are just kind of two points in line with that I'd like to make. One is that if this was discovered, if DuPont had given over the documents that they were supposed to back in the early 80s, then we wouldn't be having the problem of him sitting in his truck and wondering what to do, because they would have figured it out by then and hopefully come up with a good alternative. Because they have brilliant,
yeah,
chemists at DuPont, and they can come up with an alternative. And the second point is that, we need to be clear with people on what is appropriate in terms of saying something is safe or not. And I think that sort of the approach of, if it's not sure that it's safe, then we shouldn't be telling people it's safe.
On the other hand, it's up against all this convenience and a desire to exploit that convenience. John Hines, what do you say to our man in the parking lot who wants to buy Teflon powder? Would you say go and do it or not? And what about DuPont's apparent failure to make some of these reports? Is that industry typical, or does it look out of line to you?
Well, what I would say is to quote what EPA said in their preliminary risk assessment. They said there's no reason for anyone not to use consumer products that contain Teflon or PTFE or telomer-based materials. So there's EPA has taken the position and that there's no reason not to use those products.
So more to come, but in the preliminary findings, there it is. It sounds
can,
like.
Can I just break in for a second?
Yes, Tim.
Just because that's somewhat misleading, and the reason that they say that in the risk assessment is because they do not have the legal basis to say not to use it yet. However, their risk assessment does say, you know, it comes up with a level of exposure that is a problem, and so that may come down. It is not their conclusion that it should not be used. They're just saying that they cannot make that determination yet.
Mm. And I'd like to respond to that.
Yes,
too,
John Hines.
Too, if I could.
Okay.
Because I think maybe too much has been made of this preliminary EPA risk assessment and the levels being too close, because, in fact, what the risk assessment shows is that there's a large range of values from very large values to very small values, and EPA says in that risk assessment, we think it's not at either of those extremes, it's somewhere in the middle.
So we're going to have to wait for their final word there.
Well, we don't have to wait. There's a report of a very nice study that was published just last month or so that looked at this in more detail and concluded that, gosh, when you did it as best you can do, the levels are, there is a adequate margin of safety, and there is therefore a low concern.
Amy Cortez, DuPont must just be hating this. They for years now, have prided themselves on being kind of a model for handling chemicals.
Well, that's absolutely right. They make a lot of their corporate values and their stewardship of the environment and their safety record. And so in light of that, you know, often these companies are held to a higher standard, but even at average standard, I think they would fail. If you were a steward of the environment and of health, I think there are some serious concerns here, and at the very least, the issue is not resolved. We don't know what the chemistry is and what the real threat is. But you would think that a company that had those values and acted on those values would be more forthcoming and more proactive and might have acted on this a long time ago.
Then DuPont spin. Amy Cortez, I know we have to let you go, but thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Amy Cortez, contributing writer for the New York Times, and John Hines at the Environmental Health Research Foundation, thank you for being with us tonight.
You're welcome.
We are talking about the flap over Teflon. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. When we come back, what to do about those pots and pans. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the flap over Teflon and whether or not the ubiquitous material of convenience is a health hazard. You can join the conversation. Is a little danger in the air and water, the closet and the kitchen sink, just the price of modern convenience? Are you ready to pay that price? And when fears are raised about such a common product with so much money at stake, how do we get to the truth? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Susan is calling from Scituate, Massachusetts. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I just was listening to the program, and I wanted to relate my Teflon story.
Okay.
I was in a houseware store it was before Christmas, and I was looking for a new cookie sheet to make Christmas cookies. And as I was looking through the racks, there was a woman next to me, and we got to chatting. And I was saying that I didn't like the cookie sheets that had the coating on them.
Okay.
And she mentioned to me, she said, well, my daughter is an oncologist at one of the hospitals in Boston, and she has told me never to buy anything with Teflon on it, that it causes cancer.
So after hearing what you've heard tonight, I have to say, we've got people saying it's safe from DuPont, people saying it's safe from the Environmental Health Research Foundation, Tim Kropp saying it's not, and concerns raised elsewhere. How do you decide?
It's one of those things that You have to take everything that you hear with a grain of salt, and you have to make your own personal decisions. I remember when I was pregnant with one of my children, and
yeah.
I wouldn't drink coffee, I wouldn't eat chocolate, I wouldn't take an aspirin, and my youngest daughter was born very prematurely, and because I had toxemia, and with the second one, they put me on aspirin therapy, and they said, "Oh, it's perfectly safe, it's perfectly safe." And I said, "Well, you know, when I'm sitting in my doctor's office and I see all these posters for DD, you know, the drug that they used to give women in the 60s.
Yep, right.
I said, "You know, doctors told women back then that this was an okay thing, and then we, you know, a generation later, we have children with birth defects.
Right.
Doctors." Are just people. And
a lot's not known, and yet the research goes on, and we have to try and make our way through this in the most intelligent possible way. Susan, let's see if we can get some kind of response, an answer for you on the cookie sheet issue, which is kind of the frying pan issue. And thanks for your call. We're joined now from Sag Harbor, New York, by Jack Bishop. He is executive editor of Cook's Illustrated Magazine. Jack Bishop, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
So you've no doubt read about the flap over Teflon, and maybe you've heard about it for years, and you can imagine the consternation that this causes to people. They look into their kitchen cupboards, and they're probably full of Teflon-coated frying pans, at least, maybe new, maybe very old and scarred up. How do you think about this, Jack? You guys look at all kinds of kitchen utensils, and that's only one face of Teflon, but what's your advice here?
Well, I mean, one thing to say at the beginning is that from a cooking point of view, Teflon is a great product. It allows you to use a lot less fat when you're cooking, which,
mm-hmm.
of course, has its benefits. But, of
right.
course, we're very, very concerned about this issue because the recommendations that we are seeing from DuPont, which is that basically you shouldn't be using the pan over anything above medium heat on your stovetop, don't necessarily reflect the realities in the kitchen. And, in fact, many magazines and books have published recipes suggesting using higher than medium heat. And,
of course.
You know, those are published recipes. And, of course, there's always sort of room for error in people leaving the pans on burners and them overheating. And seems like there is a real risk here. And we're actually conducting some tests as we speak now in the kitchen to sort of analyze what the actual temperature of the pan is when we prepare some of our favorite recipes in nonstick skillets, because DuPont has published a temperature of 500 degrees at which they think the pan should not get above that temperature in order to protect the nonstick coating.
And you're thinking
how realistic that is.
Right. You're thinking it may happen. It may happen frequently. So obvious convenience there. But if people are thinking about alternatives, what are they? Is it back to cast iron? What's the range of options here, Jack?
Well, you can always use a regular skillet, but if you're going to be cooking things like eggs or fish that are particularly prone to sticking that are delicate, that means you need to be putting more fat in the pan. So, you know, that's a trade-off, obviously, that a lot of people have not wanted to make in the past, and they've chosen the nonstick pans.
Now, it was just a couple of years ago that we heard there was a scare about aluminum pans. What about these, you know, there are all these other things, Calphalon, I don't even know all the brand names. What's Teflon, what's not, does it matter if it's aluminum or stainless or cast iron?
Well, in terms of Teflon, basically that Teflon coating seals the surface. So in terms of what the food is touching, it's touching the Teflon. The exterior of the pan can be stainless steel, it could be aluminum, but frankly, the food is not coming into contact with the exterior of a nonstick pan. It's only coming in contact with the nonstick surface. So,
but if you go for a pan that doesn't have a nonstick coating,
mm-hmm.
what's your recommendation?
In the test kitchen, our favorites are stainless steel. They're inert, basically. They don't ever cause any reactions with the food in terms of flavor reactions, which you can occasionally get with cast iron or aluminum, and they're easy to keep clean. So that's what we like. But that said, when we are doing certain recipes, like an omelet, scrambled eggs, we reach for a nonstick skillet.
And if you don't, you're either going to put an awful lot of oil or fat in there, or you're going to spend a lot of time washing that frying pan.
Exactly.
Jack Bishop, thanks so much for a little kitchen advice for us here tonight.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Jack Bishop is executive editor at Cook's Illustrated Magazine. Paul is calling from Hollis, New Hampshire. Hi, Paula. You're on the air.
Hello. Well, I have a warning to any of your listeners that might have birds like canaries, parrots, cockatiels, anything in the kitchen.
Okay.
This is a very well-known thing that happens to birds. I have the
what is it?
Medical textbook in front of me written by three of the best veterinarians in the world for avian medicine.
But what happens? Do they sing? Do they fly?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like the canary in the coal mine. They drop dead when you overheat Teflon. The Teflon, overheated Teflon, the gas released into the air attacks their lungs, and they just drop dead.
Paula, we've got it. Let me put that to Tim Krupp. Tim, do you know the syndrome? Is there a syndrome?
There is, and that one is actually, that warning, you can actually find it on DuPont's own website. So that's not something that they will argue with. It's called a polymer fume fever, and it can actually happen in humans, although not at the dropping dead point. But it can manifest itself as a cold or fever would, so that you wouldn't be able to distinguish the symptoms from a normal cold or fever.
So this goes to the high temperature use issue.
Yes, although it's been shown that it doesn't have to be an extremely high temperature. In fact, normal temperatures for cooking bacon, for instance, would get it to temperatures where you would be kind of off-gassing components that could get you sick.
Tim, we've just got another minute here. Let me ask you, for everyone who's listening, there's the big inconclusive element here tonight. You're raising all kinds of caution flags. We're hearing reassurance from DuPont and others. When are we likely to get clarity around this? What's the timetable?
It would depend on whether, companies want to work with EPA or not. The EPA will issue its final risk assessment soon, but I think that what you have to rely on is the science that's been published in peer-reviewed literature by independent scientists in academia, or the industry's own publications, and look at those.
But is the EPA going to settle this with this round of pressure on DuPont?
Hopefully, but that's still up in the air, and we here hope that they take the strongest stance possible, especially with the fine that's coming up, because the maximum fine of $313 million barely takes a bite out of the profits that they've gotten from Teflon.
$100 million a year and ticking. I guess in the meantime, Teflon moderation and watch those high temperatures at the very least.
Right. And maybe, you don't have to go for the stain-resistant pants or things like that, and also that that industry should know that this has a consequence. That doing hiding information, from the public has a consequence.
Tim Krupp, thanks a lot for joining us tonight. We're out of time with
you.
That. Tim Krupp, senior scientist at the Environmental Working Group. He's been investigating the effects of Teflon. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, a new report from Human Rights Watch chronicles more abuses in Sudan. This is On Point. Humanitarian disaster worsens in the Darfur region of western Sudan. A report released today by Human Rights Watch described fresh atrocities in Darfur, including the rape of girls as young as 13. The report claims the Sudanese government is absorbing the marauding Janjaweed militia into its security forces, an accusation that directly counters Khartoum's claims that it is ending protection of militia leaders. The Human Rights Watch report comes on the heels of a July 30th UN Security Council resolution that demanded Sudan disarm the Janjaweed militia and bring its leaders to justice within 30 days. Violence in Darfur has killed 30,000 so far and left 2 million short of food and medicine. For more on today's Human Rights Watch report, we go now to Toronto, Canada, where Georgette Gagnon, Deputy Director of the African Division of Human Rights Watch, joins us on the line. Georgette, thanks for being with us. What exactly are you reporting today?
What we're reporting is that in spite of government claims that the situation is improving for civilians in Darfur and that the Janjaweed militias are actually being disarmed, the evidence on the ground shows otherwise. Civilians continue to be forcibly displaced from their homes and villages in Darfur, their homes destroyed. Women and girls, as you said in your introduction, are being raped and brutally beaten when they move out of these areas of government control and into areas where the Janjaweed militias are operating. There is continued government bombing, particularly in South Darfur. People are not getting the humanitarian assistance that they need.
So what does all this say about the international pressure, such as it's been, that has been brought to bear to this point on Sudan?
Well, what it says is that it hasn't had much effect on the government's actions. It certainly hasn't had much effect or improved the situation of the over 1 million civilians who are displaced inside Darfur.
Is Human Rights Watch making recommendations about what might be more effective international pressure?
Yes. We have recommended that the Security Council step up its action plan for getting the Sudan government to abide by a number of commitments it made in this Security Council resolution. We're also recommending that the UN and others call on the African Union to deploy a much greater peacekeeping force in Darfur to bring the situation under control. The African Union has offered to send in troops, about 2,000 of them. The government of Sudan has rejected this.
Are there any international troops along this border at this point? I heard something about French forces in the area or going in.
Yes, there are about 200 French forces in Chad, on the Chad-Darfur border, providing protection to those refugees in Chad from Darfur, also assisting with delivery of humanitarian assistance. But there are no foreign troops inside Darfur.
And what's your sense, if you're correct that the government of Sudan in Khartoum is misrepresenting what's going on there, what are the real leverage points? How can the international community put the pressure on the right point to make the government act differently?
Well, the Security Council in the resolution has said that it would consider much more robust actions, such as, for example, targeted sanctions against government of Sudan officials if it continually failed to meet its commitments under this resolution. In addition, there may be a point where the international community is just going to have to say, we are going to take action, you know, with or without the consent of the Sudan government, and increase our presence in that country to protect the many, many civilians at risk there.
There's been talk of 30,000 dead already. Your report suggests as many, or wire reports today, as many as 50,000, but much larger numbers have been projected as a possibility. We've just got a few seconds left, but what's the calendar, what's the timetable by which something needs to be done to prevent the much bigger number?
Every day that goes by, more people die and more people are at risk of starvation and disease from the lack of humanitarian assistance, clean water, etc. I mean, there are projections that 300,000 people could die over the next few months.
Georgette Gagnon has joined us from Toronto, Canada. She's with Human Rights Watch. Georgette Gagnon, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And there we are. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.